ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
ABC AFL Daily podcast time. Round 12 nearly completed. There's a game in cyclonic conditions out west that is still to be completed. But on this podcast, you know that every game is going to be covered with all of the big issues too. Five drops per week, five different flavours. If you're not listening to them all, you're missing out. Ben Cameron in position. I've got the former Hawthorn and Carlton champion, AFLW Coach of the Year in 2019 as well, Daniel Harford with me, Half. And we're going to launch into it. I can feel it bubbling.
Yep.
Because it's bubbling in my house.
What's happened?
I am...
Need to get that fixed.
The partner of... I do need to get that fixed. Rising damp. But I am the partner of a Foundation Fremantle member, Alice. And it is Wharfy time. All right. Fremantle, 25-point winners over Brisbane. They are starting to believe Daniel Harford.
Well, about time. I'm surprised that Alice has taken so long to jump on board. I've been on the train for a little while now that they've got what it takes, because they are proving that regardless of the opposition, the venue, the conditions, they're not a fair weather team anymore. They are a consistently good, no, they're better than that. They're a consistently very, very good football team. And they're positioning themselves now for a real crack at the top end of the table. And that gives you a chance, with double chances, obviously, for top four teams in the competition to play off in a preliminary final, and then who knows what happens from there. That's the beauty of the game. Once you get the preliminary final weekend, you are absolutely in it up to your eyeballs. And that's where I think they should be. And that's where I think they should be targeting. Now, I don't know enough about the inner workings or the inner psychology of the Fremantle Footy Club, but I would hope that they're not sitting there saying, oh, no, we'll just go about our business and we're just trying to grow every single week in the old one week at a time type situation. I would love there to be an inner belief within the football club that we are one of the best teams in the competition. They showed that with their performance against the Brisbane Lions on the road on the weekend. Another incredibly strong start to the game. Caught Brisbane on the hop. Let them back in a little bit late, but I wouldn't mind betting the handbrake was pulled to a degree there. And they've got everything covered on field. They've got power forwards. They've got X-factor match winners. They've got unbelievable mids. They've got strong defenders. They've got running interceptors. They've got just about everything you need from a personnel perspective. And they're currently doing it without two of the absolute guns in Hayden Young and Caleb Sarong.
Yeah, it was a prove-it game for Fremantle, and they did just that. And that is important. That was why, in my opinion, it was important, because there's only so many of these on the run home for them. They've got Geelong in Perth in round 15, and then they've got Sydney at home again in round 18.
Yep.
A few other points on this. So those games are important so that the group believes they can beat the best and possibly win the flag in September. The other point is now they've got 33 days in Perth. They've got North Melbourne in WA, North Melbourne in Bunbury,
yep,
the bye, then Geelong at home, Gold Coast at home, then they travel to Canberra to play GWS. That's important for a team that travels as much as Fremantle. Top two is important. I spoke to people at West Coast Half when they won it in 2018 who told me that they believed it was so important they finished top two. Week off for the pre-finals bye, which is now the wildcard weekend.
Yep.
Home qualifying final, they won that. Week off, no travel. Home prelim final, won that grand final. No travel for 5 weeks.
Yeah, yeah.
So important for a WA-based team.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. So they're currently sitting 11 wins, 11 in a row, which we should highlight as well. Club record, 11 wins in a row. Top of the ladder by a game. They've got 6 more games at home, plus the Bunbury game, so we'll claim that as well, against the Kangaroos, which you'd have to pencil in. In fact, I'll pin it. I'll get the pen and put that in for them. So they should be winning at least 18 games. That's before you even venture into state.
Yeah.
So they're going to have a great year, and they should finish top two. And quite rightly, be contenders for the premiership. I discussed this 3 or 4 weeks ago. They just look like they had it together. And certainly not something that not a lot of other people have seen either. People have been on to Fremantle for a little while, but they are a serious footy team. And I just think it's the balance of their list. It's the balance of their on-field positioning. It's the quality at every area of the ground. It's coming together nicely. It's been a beautiful build. It's taken some time. Justin Longmuir has copped some heat for the way he's developed, and he's added the layers. Bit slowing from an offensive perspective for a lot of people's liking, but he's built this beautifully through a period of time.
So too is David Walls, the list manager. And no surprises, yep, that a man whose name is Walls is very good at building a list.
Yep.
I always speak about Justin Longmuir being the economist too. So I think his coaching is sometimes misunderstood. He's balancing the books in play with the way he wants the game to look, almost on champion data. So that is very much the way he goes about it with his coaching. We have to talk about Brisbane out of this game as well. So the concern for me with Brisbane here all of a sudden half is that this is a group that you would think after a loss to Geelong by 41 points, then conceding 14 goals to Zip in the third term against GWS the week before, would have been strongly challenged by their coach.
Yep.
And yet they come out and are soundly beaten by Fremantle. So what's your level of concern about the reigning premiers?
It's rising.
Reigning premiers?
Absolutely rising, the concern for Brisbane. I thought they'd go through, and they wouldn't necessarily be a dominant team through the home and away season, just because what they've been through in the last couple of years load-wise and the requirements that puts on your players and the demands they put on your players, and even just the psychology of winning all the time and then winning the premiership, being to the top of the mountain, I thought that'd, you know, take a toll. But it's getting to a point now where it's becoming a dangerous situation for them, dangerous scenario. Three games in a row they've lost, and a couple of those at home. They are nowhere near the team that they were in the last couple of finals campaigns. And they don't need to be necessarily just right now, but they've got to qualify for it. And this is what Lee Matthews always used to talk about at Brisbane. We've just got to qualify. And this team might be able to do that, just get to the finals and then start to flick the switch a little bit. Chris Fagan's a bit concerned about that. He doesn't really believe that from what I'm reading between the lines when he talks. But it's what's happening through the middle of the ground. It's between the arcs that is really worrying me, just visually. I have no, obviously, involvement at Brisbane, but just watching it visually on the games, either at live or on the TV, there's not enough effort through the middle third of the ground. It's all relying on, but you're relying upon star factor and X factor in front of the ball, and you're relying on brilliance individually behind the ball. And then there's in between, it's I don't know what it is. It's just, there's not much going on. There's certainly not a lot of a defensive intent through that area of the ground. And even from an attacking perspective, they seem to be slow and almost too methodical, trying to be too methodical, which teams are really able to shut down these days, certainly in 2026 footy. So my concern is rising for the Brisbane Lions. Part of me still thinks that if they can qualify, it doesn't really matter where they finish, that they'll be able to contend for another premiership because of their vast experience and the fact that they just know they can, whereas most of the other teams in the competition don't know that. They don't know they can get there and finish the job, whereas Brisbane do. So it's a real watch, no doubt. If I was Chris Fagan, I'd start to be getting a bit concerned.
Yeah, it's a team that has been to the finals for the last 7 years. They've been to the last three grand finals, won two of them, the last two, of course. But sometimes when there's a dynastic run of some description, there's often a point where you look back and you go, oh, it was really
that
obvious
was
there.
Yep.
I wonder whether that third quarter against GWS will prove to be that moment. Also, are you a believer in the premiership quarter half?
Third quarter, premiership
yep.
quarter? No, not necessarily.
Okay, because in the last four games, they're minus 137 in the third term and have lost all four of them. So,
well, one of those quarters was 86,
yeah,
though. It's a bit of an outlier.
Yeah, it does make up a lot of the 137, doesn't it? Anyway, we'll move on from that game. Brennan Cox did have a knee injury, so a bit of a concern for Fremantle there. Carlton defeated Geelong by 4 points. And my takeaway, as we do on our Sunday night takeaways half,
yes,
is that Michael Voss would have to be watching this thinking, you jerks, where was this for me? He would, wouldn't he? Like, he'd have to.
I don't know. I'd love to talk to Michael Voss and just find out what he's thinking right now. Because that was my initial reaction on that first game where they won. Who'd they beat? The Bulldogs. The week he got sacked. And I thought, you mongrels. We've had all this there and you go and do that when I get the chop. You mongrels. There's a bit of different stuff going on at Carlton now. And he had some of these players under his nose that, for whatever reason, weren't getting opportunities when Vossie was still in the big chair. So that's got to be on him a little bit and his support staff at the time. Clearly, there's been the opportunity for rejuvenation with Josh Fraser coming in and him being given the keys. And it's not just Josh Fraser. I mean, he's obviously the interim coach and the figurehead for it. But I think there's been the ability to take the shackles off in terms of who plays, why we play them, what we're trying to get out of that. And the bonus is for Carlton is that because of this new energy that's been injected into the team, and let's be honest, there's some talent involved in that as well, We talk about Eisen and Billy, Billy cross half back.
Billy Wilson, sorry,
I had a bit of a blank. Billy Wilson cross half back. So those two in particular stand out to me. So they've been there. They've been waiting for an opportunity playing in the VFL and playing pretty good footy. So they've had chance to do it. So Vossi's going to sit there and go, well, why didn't I play these blokes? Why couldn't we get the results that we're getting in the last three, or they are getting in the last 3 weeks? And I'd love to hear that reflection from him. But there is certainly a winds of change have gone through, and it's been positively received from everyone at Carlton on the back of the opportunity and the chance to try something different.
Yeah. Luke Ball said on AFL Saturday, which is in this podcast channel every Saturday afternoon, let's not sugarcoat it. It doesn't reflect well on Vossi. Probably what's happened since he's gone. I mean, Patrick Cripps is the beacon for it. I mean, he looked washed 4 weeks ago.
Yeah.
All of a sudden, 30 disposals, 8 clearances, 7 score involvements, 1 goal, which is a towering mark,
yep,
over Jeremy Cameron, goes back and snaps the winning goal. He looks like a new man all of a sudden.
Yeah, but why? So that's where I disagree slightly with Bolly there, because I don't think that's a reflection on Vossi. I think that's a reflection on the environment, the heaviness that was around. And I think it had been around since the end of last year when Carlton came out and said that Michael Voss will be our coach into season 2026. Effectively saying he's one loss away from being out of his job. Effectively is what they said. We couldn't promise him the whole year, so we're just going to get him into 2026. And I think that's weighed heavily on, it's probably the untold story, I reckon. I think that's weighed really heavily on everyone at Carlton. That you're hanging for your job, you know, by the barest of margin, by a thread.
No one performs.
And everyone feels
well
that. Everyone no. feels that. So I think that's been one of the real burdens that Carlton players, and certainly coaching staff and the fans have been the recipients of, that they've carried through this season 2026. Now that's not there. So Cripper's the reason I can't fully agree with Bawley, because Cripper's one of the great Carlton people, tries his backside off every single week. And I just reckon he was feeling the weight of the environment, the heaviness of the environment, as opposed to now that it's all been taken away, the circuit's been broken, and now it's all free, and we're getting the Patrick Cripps that we thought we might have lost.
Yeah, I tend to agree with you too. I think that plume was just hanging so heavily over all of them. Can they make the wild card spot now, half? So they're 2 games out of it.
They've got a good month ahead.
They're 4-8. They've got a really good month. They've got very winnable games coming against Essendon, GWS less so with the way they're playing at the moment, then West Coast and Richmond. So
it's a good month.
They should win 3 of those 4.
If you're Josh Frazier, you're penciling in, you're almost getting the texture out. You should win 3 of those, shouldn't you?
So that will get them to 7-9. And then from there, they're in the season, because even a game below what we would call in American sports 500, so even money on your season, might be enough to get you into 10th this year.
Yep. Well, possibly even 2 games below even money, the way things will unfold, I reckon. So we'll see. Keep an eye on that. But yeah, maybe it's 11, 12, 11, 13, or how many games we play? Is it 23 games we play?
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe it's 10, 13 might even get you in. Who knows? 11, 12 probably should get you into the wild card, depending on how the rest of the competition sort of sits. So, yeah, if they go 3 from 4 in the next 4 weeks, or next 4 games, they very much are in the race for the wild card, because the adrenaline and the energy will be absolutely rolling.
So the way that it sits at the moment, 6-6, GWS are in 10th.
Yep.
Same as Brisbane, who are 9th. They've got pretty much the same percentage. Collingwood, 5-6-1, so half a game below GWS with that draw they had against Hawthorn. They are 11th. So at the moment, it's even money. It Corbin Middlemass has spoken about the fact that since we went to an 18-team competition, 33% of the time a losing record has been good enough for 10th. 33% of the time even money has been good enough. 33% of the time you've needed a winning record.
Yeah.
So it will be around even money. Last night, half, the Western Bulldogs defeated Collingwood by 4 points. And our takeaway here is that close wins are worth their weight in gold. Michael Selwood's mark late was absolutely enormous.
Leo Barry-esque.
It was.
It was Leo Barry-esque. It was a ripper from Selwood, because he came in from a really awkward angle too and just turned his body at the right time. And it certainly wasn't a clean one grab take of in the two hands, but he was able to get it back to his chest and own that moment, which he'll look back on, I imagine, often in the next couple of days, just to see where he came from and how it happened and what it meant for his footy club. And I'm sure will be reviewed heavily by the coach and these teammates as well, because that was a pivotal moment. Like, because that Collingwood, as we know, through the last couple of years, they're a team, a bit like the D's in 2026, they just kept coming at you. And there's no better team in footy about managing a scoreboard and a clock in the last 3 or 4 minutes of a game, a tight game, than the Magpies. So his ability to stand up in that moment and take it and own it was brilliant for Selwood, who I think's been a terrific find.
Yeah.
Now, we had that moment, obviously, last night, and we're all talking about him, but there's been a bit of conversation in commentary boxes.
He found one.
Across the year about, gee, there's a bit of something in this boy.
He's a classic Bevo find, I reckon, like a bit of a weird find that really looks like a player. So the back of his baseball card, no relation to the famous Selwood football family, double L in his name, pick 5 in the mid-season draft last year, taken from Peel Thunder where he won a flag.
Yep.
Plays the second half of the season for Footscray. They win a flag. So had success wherever he's gone. He's done a great job. Just on the Dogs two half, close wins this year. So won by 5 points against Brisbane in opening round, 6 points against Adelaide in round two, the Oscar Baker snap from the pocket that won them the game, 2 points against Port Adelaide in round 9, 3 points against Melbourne in round 11, and 4 points against Collingwood in round 12. So 5 wins by under a kick. 1971 was the last time that the Bulldogs had that many close wins in the same season. So often it sort of...
How'd they go in 71?
That's a very good question.
I know the Hawks won the flag because they won all the 61, 71, not 81. Did they win 81? No, they didn't. Anyway, we're getting sidetracked. Yeah. I'm sidetracking you. My apologies. It's a phenomenal record. And we talk about this in a lot in footy. And at the end of the season, for teams that don't make the finals, you will often go back and you'll work out how many games you won and lost by under 10 points or under 2 goals.
Yeah.
And they are the difference makers. Some years it'll be heavily skewed in the loss by under 2 goals. And some years when you make the final, you sneak in, it'll be heavily skewed by winning the games by under 2 goals. Because that's really the margin. It's sort of 12 points either way. It's a 24-point swing that can really make or break your season, any given season. And the way it's going at the moment, and the Doggies have played really well the last couple of weeks. We saw them against Melbourne 2 weeks ago. At Docklands, and they were tough. As much as anything else, they were tough. And they showed a real competitive edge last night against the Pies as well. So I'm not sure it's humming at the Bulldogs at the minute, but they're showing the toughness that will be able to contribute really well to for them in the back end of the season, I reckon.
Yeah, Max Lawton, who does some work at Fox Sports, great writer, he often speaks about how it sort of normalizes. So you might win a lot of close games 1 year.
Yep.
Often it flips the next year. So it tends to, he believes, I hope I'm not misquoting him here, largely comes down to luck. So as much as we want to believe it's scenario training, good players, all the rest of it, he believes that the numbers sort of suggest it comes down to luck. 11-11. In 1971, the Bulldogs. So just dead even. Dead even. Maybe that's where they'll be again this year.
And they won how many? 5 by under a goal?
They won 6 by under a goal.
Gee, they must have pretty average the rest of the year.
I just want to introduce this to you as well, Half. So one of my, you might already know about it, being the very broad sports fan you are, but in baseball, one of my favourite stats they have is called the war stat.
No, I don't know about this.
It means wins above replacement.
What's that mean?
So basically they work out through a very complicated formula that if Aaron Judge, the star slugger for the New York Yankees, goes out,
yep,
and they have to go get the next best guy out of AAA baseball in the minor leagues, how many wins over the 162-game season that they play does that actually cost the New York Yankees?
Right, okay.
So that might cost them 10 wins.
Yep.
They might be a 10-win worst team when Aaron Judge isn't there.
Yep, righto.
Okay. I just crunched these numbers leading into the game yesterday because the Bulldogs got Tim English back. So since the start of 2024, yes, when Tim English plays, they win 2 out of 3. They meatloaf it.
Yeah.
And without him, they've won 1 in 5 since the start of 2024.
Right. That's a good little, that is a homework from you.
That is a big difference, isn't it? So I think they love him. No, I think they want him. I think they need him. And I think they should love him at the Western Bulldogs.
Why do they not love him?
Well, that's just how the song goes.
Oh, of course. Sorry.
I want you. I need you. But I ain't ever going to love you.
Yeah, that's true. Sorry.
But that is how important he is to the Western Bulldogs.
I've got some close friends that are Western Bulldogs fans and sort of Nuffy territory, like hardcore Bulldogs fans, which is awesome. They love their footy. And they've been telling me this for a couple of years. Without Tim English, we can't win anything.
Mm.
That number backs that up. I've never gone to the detail that you've gone to back that up numerically. But that number backs that up. 1 out of 5 when he's not there now makes perfect sense. When you see the impact he had like in that game against Collingwood, there's no way they win it without him.
Yeah,
they can't win it without Tim English.
So that suggests they're a 46% better side when Tim English plays. Because it's 20%.
Isn't that funny? In a game where there's 18 players on the field at any given time, 23 for the game, that have impact, that one player can mean 46% difference.
It's crazy, isn't it?
Now, he was one of the world's tallest, which is helpful. But now that's bizarre. I'm not surprised by that necessarily. It's nice to have a number to associate with it, but it makes perfect sense. And for my Bulldogs fans, mates, they know exactly what you're talking about. They said, we can't win anything without Tim English. So he's got to stay healthy for them to have any impact come September if they get there.
Because I wanted to take that quickly into the Hawks. So back on Thursday night, and this will be a quick takeout from this game, is that Will Day is the straw that stirs the drink for Hawthorn.
He is.
So very similar to him, I crunched the numbers. Since the start of 2024, Hawthorn win 55% of the time without him, and they win 77% of the time with Will Day, which over the course of a season suggests he's worth about 4.5 wins to Hawthorn. So we saw him come back, 18 disposals, 5 clearances, played in the midfield, limited game time. Do you agree with that takeout, Half, that he is the main man for Hawthorn? They've got lots of important players, but he's the one they can least afford to lose.
Yeah, well, I think when you look at the way Hawthorn are structured through the middle of the ground in particular, that he's, while John Newcomb's a fabulous player and co-captain this year, Day's the class. He's the cream. He comes in and really makes things tick and catapults it into possibility status, to premiership winning status. I think he is that guy for the Hawks. So I was a bit surprised, I must admit, that they played him the other night. I thought they might have given him another week, and then they got the bye, I think, and then they could come back and be cherry ripe to come back in through the back half of the season. But they managed the minutes all right, got a bit tight there at one stage, which I thought was going to be a concern. But then they owned the game, and he was able to pretty much do what he liked in the second half of the game. So that was a good result for him. But I think you're right. I think he's in the English category as the pivotal player for Hawthorn to achieve anything. He's got to be there.
Sydney and Richmond yesterday, this was ugly for Richmond, 114 points. And Isaac Heaney, one of the most marketable, exciting players in the game, takes high marks, kicks goals from the middle of the ground, snaps goals, does it all, wins contested possessions. He is the player that brings you through the turnstiles.
Yep.
30 plus, 5 goals. And our takeout from this game is where Daniel Harford ranks Isaac Heaney amongst the top 5 in the comp. Nick Dacos, Marcus Bontempelli, Isaac Heaney, Christian Petrarca, Zach Butters and Cozzy Pickett. I know what you're saying, that's 6. Leave one out, order the next 5, Half.
Well, here's my top 5 from 5 to 1. Butters, Pickett, Dacos, Bontempelli, Heaney.
Heaney 1.
Yeah, I've had him there for a month. I've been big on him all season long. This is it's nice that you're on board finally and you're coming with me. I think he's the maximum damage player. 32 and 5. No other player does that, but he does this often. He'll have 30 and 3, and he'll have 25 and 4, and this is what he does. So I'm all for guys getting a lot of the footy, but if you can't hit the scoreboard, if you want to be a superstar of the game and crown the best player in the competition, now this is where Petrarca probably could have taken Butter spot 2 upon reflection. You've got to be able to impact and hit scoreboard and play in multiple zones. And Heaney's that guy. Bont's been doing it.
Which is the knock on Butters, isn't it?
Yep.
He's not a big goal kicker.
Yep. So in fact, I'm taking him out. I'm putting Petrarca in his spot. Sorry, Zach. You're out. Petrarca's in 5.
You're out.
He's out. Pickett does it. He's evolved into that player. Dacos is now adding that goal kicking impact, scoreboard impact stuff to his game. We've seen the Bont do it in the last couple of years. And this year, certainly through injury, he's been resting a bit more forward. But Heaney's the one. Heaney's the one that can break games. And there's not too many other guys that could do what he does. In fact, I'll say there's no one else that can do what he does.
Yep. It's only happened 10 times since 2014, 30 and 5.
Is that right?
So it is very rare. The names, Manor, Heaney again.
Last week.
Heaney again in 2025.
Yes.
So he's done it twice. He's the only person to have done it twice. Jeremy Cameron at 30 and 7. Dane Beams. Michael Walters, Jack Sonny Billings did it against Carlton for St Kilda, Robbie Gray, Luke Parker, Trent Cotchin, Patrick Dangerfield. Those are the last 10 over going back to 2014. So Heaney the only one to have done it twice after. To back you up there.
He cements it. He cements the fact that he's the best player in the comp, the most important player in the comp, the most valuable player in the competition.
Melbourne and GWS at Alice Springs, we broadcast this game, and it was a big win for GWS. And I said on the siren that it's not quite a full tsunami yet, but GWS are riding a little wave of momentum. 49-point win over Melbourne today.
Yeah, the tide's coming in, no doubt about that, for the Giants. They've found their groove, and I can't wait to see, and it's only going to be in time that we'll be able to look back and truly measure it, I reckon, that what that third quarter against Brisbane Lions did last week for them when they kicked 14 and how that did impact their belief going forward. Now, they've got a couple of players back. Sam Taylor is back in the team, which was great news. Lockie Whitfield as well, from a little concern last week. So they're getting healthier. Talked about this before, winning games, and we did that with Bob yesterday on the call. Winning games and then having players come back in, that's the utopia. That's footy utopia through the middle of a season. And they found their groove. They were really efficient going inside forward 50. 19 goals from 46 inside forward 50, I think it was, against the Demons, which is extraordinary success rate. And the Demons, on the flip side, were the total opposite. They had 62 insides and scored 9 goals, so they couldn't work out any way of scoring. But the Giants are coming. Clayton Oliver's been one of the great stories of the year that no one's talking about. And they've got players all over the park that are starting to feel it. And you can see it when you watch them. You can see the whole vibe, the body language, as much as anything else, change.
So I look at 2023, their prelim final year, they were 4-8 and then won their next 7 in a row. And then in 2024, they were 8-7 and then went on a 7-game winning streak, finished in the top 4, lost consecutive finals. But I just wonder whether we're going to see that again from GWS this second half of the season, where they get rolling and have a really strong finish to the year half.
Well, the most important ability you've got in a footy club is availability, and good players being out there, being able to impact games. And that's what the Giants haven't had. There's been a couple of other teams in the boat this year where they had a lot of injuries for whatever reason, and key players are out, and that does affect your performance. It's such a tight competition now. It does affect your performance and your ability to win games consistently. The Giants are certainly in that. So if they can get their players back and have that system really strong, which they seem to have against Melbourne, they'll be a threat. They'll be a team you don't want to play too many times on the way home.
The final game of the round is happening as we record this podcast. West Coast and Essendon at Perth Stadium. Raining cats and dogs.
Cyclonic.
The wind is apparently the biggest issue. I was texting Mitch Turner before the game, and he texts me back, "The lights in the box just flickered on and off twice." Oh. So that's always a good sign. So you might be listening to this podcast, having watched the game on Sunday night, thinking, gee whiz, I know what they were talking about. But this is the jacket game, Kevin Sheedy waving the jacket. It's also an in to talk about Essendon and the week that they've had. I was fascinated talking to two assistant coaches before the game in Alice Springs between GWS and Melbourne. And Brett Montgomery and also Troy Chaplin, asking them about whether they would enter the Essendon process. So, Monty, just to go back, would you harbour concerns about entering the Essendon process?
Yeah, I think I would. I mean, someone in my shoes who doesn't have either Ken or Horse or even Simo's sort of credentials, I mean, it probably sounds a bit odd that you'd balk or you'd be hesitant, but I just think that's the way it is. You know, like, an opportunity is an opportunity, but if it doesn't feel real or it doesn't feel authentic, it does make it hard to consider.
It's hard to say at the moment. I think Essendon need to work out what they want to do and what process they want to run through. So until they determine what that is and whether that's they want to go with James Hurd or whether they want to run a proper process, I think they have to work that out first before you can sort of declare yourself an interest in it. So until that comes up and you sort of understand where they sit, I think for me it's more just worrying about what I'm doing now and developing as a coach. I've got aspirations to be a senior coach, but I'm not in a rush either. So there's time to be there. And look, at the end of the day, if I'm not going to be a senior coach, I'll be the best assistant coach I can be.
That was illuminating for me, Harp. Yeah. I was surprised by that. But I thought everyone's spoken about James Hurd. So what I wanted to do is take this story forward. Who are the top 5 candidates to be the next Essendon coach?
Well, it's a fine question you ask, Benjamin. If you listen to Troy Chaplin and Brett Montgomery, the top 5 in order probably Jay Hurd. James Hurd would be second. Jim Dog Hurd would be third. Hurdy would be fourth. And don't ever forget, or take your eyes off the Herdinator, because he'll be the fifth ranked.
Top five.
Yep, he sneaks into the top five. That's if you're talking to Troy Chaplin and Brett Montgomery. If you're looking outside of that top five, in my view, I would be going for John Longmire. I'd be throwing everything, the kitchen sink, at John Longmire. I think they're a club that just needs some straightening up. Don't worry about new fandangled evolution of strategy and structure.
Culture,
straighten things up. Let's get things back on track. John Longmire's a perfect man to do that.
I agree.
I'd be going straight to John Longmire. If you are looking for the new breed, and I haven't worked with these guys individually, so it's hard to sort of get a read, but you talk to people who know people and you shape your opinion on a bit of that. Daniel Jones, Syracuse, has been at the Bombers recently. Mm. He's now at Hawthorn trying to develop his coaching even further as the head of development. And he would be...
I love that he's doing that, by the way.
Yeah.
To round out his skill set.
Absolutely. It's not a risk. It's evolving as a coach, as a manager. And I think it's a wonderful thing to do. And he's been very well received at Hawthorn too, just by the way. So I think he's got to be in the mix. James Kelly was close at the D's. Also recently at the Bombers. In the last couple of years, he's been a part of that football club. So he gets it to a degree. I think he's got to be in the mix. Jamie Graham has got incredible raps from the West of the country and has been in a couple of processes, I think.
He did the Craig McRae process.
That's
and,
right.
Luke Ball was a part of that and said, like, it was a little bit early for Jamie Graham, but really impressive. Like, they had him high in that.
Yep. No, I think he's got some go. And then the other one's Brett Montgomery, who we spoke to and we heard from just before. He's now currently with the Giants, but he's been around a long time. He's experienced all different clubs and all different levels of success through all that. But straight shooter who would come in and not mess around at the Bombers either. So I think that's probably a pretty good top five. I've kept Corey Enright out. I think a lot of people would have Corey Enright in. I've kept him out because I think he'll take over the St Kilda job. I think that's... Now, I don't know this for a fact, but from reading between the lines, he's effectively been promised that job when Ross...
You're really agreement?
Yes.
Is it a good job?
Currently, no.
Yeah, I don't think so either.
I don't think it is. But I think
it's all of those long-term contracts.
Yeah, you're hamstrung a little bit, aren't you, with all of those. Yeah, no, it's not a job I would jump at the moment, but I think it's sort of almost been promised to him, curability agreement style.
St Kilda fans would say to me, rightfully, is Carlton and Essendon that appealing as well? Carlton looks
and
a little more
appealing.
And
they're probably fair questions too.
Yeah, yeah. So.
They're probably fair questions too. But and he knows the system, he knows the players, so it's probably an easier give for him. So I've taken him out because I think he'll be a St Kilda coach at some stage in the next couple of years. But Longmire, Juncer, Cusa, Kelly, Graham and Montgomery would be my five outside of Jay Hurd, James Hurd, Jim Hurd, Hurdy and the Herdinator.
Yep. Last one before we go half. Glass half full. Are you glass half full or glass half empty on the technology in football? The arc.
I wrestle with this, Benny. I must admit, I do wrestle with this because I quite like the ability for the game to be right, for the moment to be adjudicated correctly. But we just have a knack of shooting ourselves in the foot every time we get an opportunity to do it. Like the fact that goal for Ollie Dempsey was not sent for review.
Which is human error. You can't guard against that, can you?
Correct. So this has got nothing to do with the technology.
Yep.
The technology mostly works. I know there's a bit of grey area at times and how far the cameras are away from the ball and different grounds have different access to camera technology, all sorts of stuff. So
better technology we could be using with more frames.
Yeah, all that sort of stuff. There's a guy in the US that does this sort of stuff. He analyses on social media and he does baseball a lot. I can't remember his name.
Oh, it's not Jimbo.
I reckon somewhere around there.
Somewhere around there, yeah.
And
he talks about the
camera technology and what they have in baseball,
which
is a high-speed game as well, not so much 360 like ours, and what we're using is so far apart it's not funny. So technology could improve. But I think largely the technology errors are on the back of human errors.
Yeah, how
do you fix that?
You can't. I think it starts and finishes there. So is that glass half full or glass
half empty? So I don't know if that's half full or half empty. I'm not sure.
That's just...
I like the fact that we can help ourselves be right,
particularly
in big moments. I think you want to get big moments right, like grand finals and stuff. We always talk about whatever happened in the grand final. Well, we want to get those moments right because they're super important. Now, obviously, your qualification to get there could be impacted if we get it wrong through the season. But I don't know if I'm half full or half empty. I think we bugger it up.
Yeah.
I think
that's half full.
Okay.
Right. I think that's half full.
I'll take that.
Half.
Yes.
bravery comes in many forms. I've got up off my sick bed during the week to push through over the weekend and here tonight.
Is that because you played golf on Tuesday in cyclonic conditions?
Possibly, but that's not what we're running with. I think I must have caught it from somewhere else.
Okay, but, blame anyone else, mate.
Yeah, I was down for the count, and it still lives in my lungs. So
great courage, mate.
If I'm coughing and whatnot throughout the podcast. I appreciate your time. Always great to speak to you. 5 drops a week, ABC AFL Daily Podcast. Make sure you're listening to all of them.
I would.